The next section is calculating benefits for sections F to N of the P11D. Section F is a brown box section and it relates to cars and car fuel benefit. Here we have working sheet number 2 that's available to calculate the benefit if required. Employers are required to provide details of cars made available for private use. We have to show the total car benefit charge. The basic rules are that a car benefit charge is incurred whenever a car is made available without any transfer of the property in it to an employee or indeed to a member of their family or household by reason of the employment, and it is available for private use. To calculate the car benefit charge, we have to find the price of the car, add the price of any accessories, make any required deductions for capital contributions or private use contributions. And I'm going to look at this now as we move along. First of all, the price of a car. This means the list price, if it has one, and generally they do, or its notional price if it has no list price. The list price is the inclusive price published by the manufacturer, distributor, or importer of the car when sold in a single retail sale in the open market in the UK, taken to be on the day before the date the car was first registered. We have to include standard accessories and any relevant taxes, VAT, car tax, any customs or excise duty, and any tax chargeable as if it were a customs duty, and also delivery charges. But we don't count the £25 new car registration fee because it's only an administration fee. It's not a tax. For cars that are not available at some time during the year, we cannot make an adjustment unless the period of unavailability totaled at least 30 consecutive days. That's a point that needs to be watched. We need to report the list price of the car and optional accessories fitted to the car when first made available. Any accessories added after the car was first made available are to be included unless they cost less than £100. So, for example, if some mud flaps costing £95 were added to a Ford Mondeo, the £95 would be ignored. Capital contributions up to £5,000 made by the employee towards the cost of the car or accessories will be deducted from the list price. It's rare nowadays to see capital contributions, but it might occur where an employee wants something like a tow bar fitted to their car so that they can tow a caravan, and the employee may therefore insist that they pay for the cost of the tow bar. We'd add the cost of the tow bar to the list price, and we deduct the capital contribution made by the employee. Any amounts paid in the year by the employee for the private use of the car should be reported in separate boxes on the P11D. But we have to be careful that the payments were specifically for private use. And we have to exclude payments for supplies of services, such as the car insurance or a contribution towards the cost of petrol. The cash equivalent of each car must be reported, and the total cash equivalent for all cars reported on the 2010 P11D will be shown in box 9. Where the CO2 emissions figure does not end in 0 or 5, we will normally round that down to the nearest 5 grams per kilogram. But as I've said already, we cannot do this for QALEC cars, qualifying low emission cars, where the 10% rate applies. So any car that's 120 grams per kilometre or less will be 10%. Also, we have to remember that we have to add 3% diesel supplement for all cars. The next section on the P11D refers to the car fuel benefit, and this is quite an important one, and it's one where we have a real concern about mileage records. The cash equivalent of fuel for each car fuel benefit charge should be shown, and then the total cash equivalent of fuel for all cars available in 2010-11 will be entered in box 10 of the P11D. And please remember the quality standard required that if we have an entry in box 10, we must have an entry in box 9. Basically, what this means is that if we have someone that has a fuel card, but they don't have a company car, it shouldn't be reported here. There is always an issue about making good private mileage. and I've already referred earlier to the impact filing case and that making good needs to be done within a reasonable period of time. HMRC will certainly be looking at this carefully, and if employers have a problem with their employees' mileage records, they need to seriously consider whether they report the benefit year. The next section on the P11D is Section G, which is for vans. It's a brown box section, again attracting Class 1A NIC, and here we also have a working sheet, which is working sheet number 3. We have to report the cash equivalent of all vans made available for what is called unrestricted private use, and these go at box 9, and any fuel is reported at box 10. A van is defined as a mechanically propelled road vehicle which is of a construction primarily suited for the conveyance of goods or burden of any description, and of a design weight not exceeding 3,500 kilograms or 3.5 metric tons. The working sheet tells us that if the van is used mainly for business travel and the only other use is for ordinary commuting, there is no benefit charge and we need not complete the form. We can ignore other private use if it is insignificant. Where a taxable benefit does arise, the cash equivalent is the standard charge of £3,000 and the fuel charge is £550 for 2010-11. The standard charge only applies to vans that are less than 3.5 tonnes. The full charge applies if the van is used as a benefit throughout the year. Again, as with cars, we can apportion the benefit if the employee only commences receive the use of the van partway through the year or cease to use the van partway through the year. The next section of the P11D is Section H, interest-free and low-interest loans, which is again a brown box section attracting Class 1A. And here also we have working sheet number 4 to help with the calculations. The provision of an interest-free or low-interest loan to an employer or indeed to a member of the family or household, if it's by virtue of the employment, is a taxable and reportable benefit. The rules on whether a loan is a beneficial loan is dependent on the amount of interest paid, if any, and whether it is less than the official rate of interest, which, as I've already said, is 4% for 2010-11. Employers are required to report the cash equivalent for each non-qualifying loan separately, except where a close company elects to treat all non-qualifying loans in the same currency and own at the same time as one loan. I have to admit, I've never seen one of those entries on a P11D. Relief may be available for a beneficial bridging loan, but only if the qualifying relocation package is less than £8,000. And we have to show the purpose of the loan, and we have loans which are used for the purpose of a trade professional vocation, which have Category A. Category B is a loan used for the purchase of a main residence. Category C is a loan for the purpose eligible for relief other than the purchase of a main residence. Category D is loans not with an A, B or C above. And then we have Category E for loans given as part of a relocation package. And we put in an F where we have no idea what the loan is for. I will always tell AAT members that the issue to watch for with beneficial loans is, first of all, whether there's a director's overdrawn loan account, which might have been repaid by the end of the accounting period, but if it exceeded the £5,000 de minimis limit, we are going to have reporting consequences. Next section on the P11D is Section I for private medical treatment or insurance. Again, this is a brown box section, Class 1A. No working sheet here to help us, but it's fairly straightforward. We have to report the provision of private medical treatment or insurance. There is an exclusion for medical insurance cover for overseas duties. Employees should report the cost of any private medical or dental treatment or insurance premiums and the cost of any excess on the medical insurance cover if that cost is met by the employer. And I should always ask an employer whether they pay the excess, because some do in order to keep the premiums down. Any amount made good by the employer or director, perhaps for their children or other family members, should be reported here as well, leaving us with a net cash equivalent that will be taxable. I've made the point earlier on that if the medical cover is not a company scheme but is the employee's own scheme, it shouldn't be reported here at Section I. it will be a Class 1 NIC liability issue. The next section on the P11D is Section J for qualifying relocation expenditure. Again, here we have a brown box section and we have a working sheet number 5 to assist. The cost of relocating an employee is reported here, but only in relation to the excess over the £8,000 tax relief for qualifying relocations. A relocation will qualify for tax relief if the employee moves within the employment, perhaps on promotion or to take up a new employment, and providing that the new residence is within reasonable daily travelling distance of the new workplace. Qualifying expenditure includes the cost of selling the old home and buying the new one. This will include legal expenses, stamp duty, estate agents fees, removal fees, and the cost of travel between the old home and the new workplace until a new permanent home is found. It also includes the cost of temporary accommodation at the new location whilst the employee is looking for more permanent accommodation. But remember, it's only £8,000 of tax relief and it's not an annual relief. It is a relief for the one relocation. Therefore, we have to take into account for previous years. So say for 2009-10 as well as 2010-11. The next section on the P11D is Section K for services supplied. Again, a brown box section, Class 1A, but no working sheet. We have to report the cost of any services supplied to the employee, and we need to take into account any amount paid by the employee or from which tax was deducted and arrive at the net cash equivalent to be reported. The cost of any in-house services, such as tax advice provided by an accountancy firm or legal advice provided by a law firm, which should not be taxable under the marginal cost rules. The next section is Section L, which is assets placed at the employee's disposal, and this is another brown box section attracting Class 1A National Insurance. We've made some reference to this earlier when we were talking about assets transferred to an employee or director. The reporting requirement is based on the annual value of the use of the employer asset, which is 20% of the market value or cost of the asset when it was first provided as a benefit. We need to provide a description of the asset and to report the gross benefit comprising the annual value, including any additional expenses incurred on the provision of the assets. Some employer-provided assets will be exempt from a tax charge where they're provided mainly for business use and any private use is insignificant. There is also an exemption for employers providing equipment such as a wheelchair or hearing aids to an employee with a disability when it is provided to enable them to take up or retain their work and where the employer uses the equipment for significant private use. Next, we come to Section M of the P11D, which I tend to refer to as one of the sweeping up sections. It is headed Other Items. And importantly, Section M is the only section on the P11D where we have a choice of either brown box Class 1A NICs or blue box. So here again, I'll refer you to the CWG5 booklet and Appendix 1 Common Benefits to offer you some guidance on deciding where to put an entry in the P11D. This section covers in part subscriptions and professional fees, where we will report the cost to the employer of the subscriptions, and hopefully any subscriptions that are job-related and come within the revenues published List 3 should be covered by dispensation and won't have to be reported at all. If we have leisure club, golf club, gym subscriptions, etc., they will be taxable and they should be reported here. If the employer has an arrangement whereby they pay a corporate subscription for, say, a gym club, and the employees repay this, we shouldn't be reporting that year, but we'd have to be careful about the beneficial loan rules if the loan for the gym membership and a season ticket loan exceeds £5,000. The guidance for Section M also covers nursery places and the provision of a nursery place at the workplace or at premises financed and run by the employer would be exempt. In other circumstances, the cost met by the employer will be taxable and should be reported year. There's also a section about educational assistance where we have to report the cash equivalent of any scholarship awarded by reason of the parent's employment. and we also have to report the cost of any school fees or other educational assistance relating to a director or employee or his family or household. In Section M, we also report non-qualifying relocation benefits, which would not go under Section A, which are qualifying relocation benefits. So we report the cost to the employer of any non-qualifying relocation benefits. Again, in this section, we will report loans written off or waived. So we report the amount of any loans written off or waived, unless they were written off by virtue of the death of the employee, in which case they would be exempt. There is also a line for income tax paid but not deducted from director's remuneration, where we would report the amount of any income tax paid to HMRC in 2010-11 that the employer had failed to deduct from the remuneration paid to a director. And that would be irrespective of the year in which that remuneration was paid. We can ignore any income tax and notional payments which fall within Section B. This charge normally applies to income tax borne by the company, such as when HMRC issues a Regulation 80 determination. But it's rare to see entries here. The final section on the P11D, which I regard as another sweeping-up section for expenses, and it is headed Expenses Payments Made to or on Behalf of the Employee. This is purely a blue box section. As it says, the section covers expenses payments made to or on behalf of the employee, and my preference would be that all such expenses are covered by a P11D dispensation and that this section could therefore remain blank. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. We firstly have travelling and subsistence payments, which are not included in the general expense allowance, and where we would report the amount of such costs which are not covered by a dispensation. This will include any travel between home and a permanent workplace for UK employments, and employments performed wholly outside the UK. We would report expenses including fares, hotels, meals, etc. And for guidance, you can look to the HMRC booklet 490, Employee Travel, a Tax and NSE Guide. The next part is entertainment. And as I constantly tell AAT members, there is no separate headings for business entertaining, staff entertaining, working lunches. So this one needs some careful consideration. The first thing that we have to do is to say whether or not the company is a trading organisation, in which case we're confirming that the cost will be disallowed in the company's accounts. HMRC officers will be looking at the tax computations and comparing that with the information on the P11D if there isn't a dispensation, so be aware of that. Employees of non-trading organisations might be asked to prove that the expense was incurred wholly and exclusively and necessary in the performance of their duties in order to avoid a tax charge, but that is rarely a problem. Staff entertaining is one of those really difficult issues which should be reported here if taxable amounts are not included in the PAY settlement agreement. I will, of course, discuss this in much greater detail when I present the P11D course in London on the 14th of May 2011. The next part of Section N year is headed General Expenses Allowance for Business Travel, where we have to report the amount of any round sum allowance, which is not exclusively for entertaining, and where they've been taxed with the payroll, the cash equivalent will be reduced to nil. If the allowances can be shown to cover genuine business expenditure and that there's no element of profit, the tax office should be asked to issue a dispensation to cover the agreed amounts, and therefore this entry should be blank. We have another heading for payments for use of home telephone, where we will report any expenses incurred in connection with the provision of a telephone at the home of the director or employee, again if this is not covered by a dispensation. It's important to remember that the payment of any part of the rental element will be liable to both tax and national insurance, whereas the cost of identifiable business calls will be tax deductible. Also within Section N, we now have non-qualifying relocation expenses, as opposed to the qualifying costs within Section J and the non-qualifying benefits within Section M. So here we report any relocation expense payments that are not qualifying for tax relief purposes. This might be something like compensation payments for the loss on the sale of a property. Next, I want to cover incidental overnight expenses, which is an interesting topic and used to be called personal incidental expenses and commonly was known as PIs. We are required to report the full cost of any incidental overnight expenses if any director or employee incurs costs which are in excess of the exemption limits, and they are only £5 per night in the UK and £10 per night outside the UK. Where the costs are kept within those limits, nothing has to be reported. Where the costs exceed those limits, the whole amount has to be reported, not just the excess. We then have another heading for other expenses, which is part of the sweeping up on the P11D. So we'd include your anything in connection with the provision for the director or employee of any benefits or facilities of whatsoever nature, which we haven't returned under another heading.